Welcome to Between the Lines, presenting news and analysis of critical issues affecting our region, the nation, and the world. This week we present Jeff Cohen, journalism professor and co-founder of Roots Action, who discusses the anger among many Bernie Sanders supporters in response to Hillary Clinton's choice of Virginia Senator Tim Kaine as her vice presidential running mate. Frederick Clarkson of Political Research Associates, who assesses the Republican Party's continued fealty to culture war policies advocated by the Christian right. And Ann Rolface, founding director of the Louisiana Bucket Brigade, who talks about the local campaign to end new oil and gas drilling in the Gulf of Mexico and the effort to enlist national environmental groups in the cause. But first we begin with a summary of some of the week's underreported news stories.
For the first time in 16 years, the International United Nations AIDS Conference returned to South Africa, the epicenter of the global AIDS pandemic. The AIDS crisis has changed dramatically since 2000, as thousands of HIV-infected people in southern Africa are now receiving drug treatment. However, AIDS activists are concerned that the number of people infected with HIV is growing again, even as world leaders boldly proclaim the end of AIDS. Between 2010 and 2015, there was a 57% increase in HIV infections in Eastern Europe and Central Asia, even as infections in Caribbean nations continued to decline. In June, the UN General Assembly passed a resolution urging more resources be committed to the goal of ending the AIDS pandemic by 2030. But over the last 3 years, funding for AIDS treatment contributed by international donors fell by $1.5 billion annually. In hard-hit communities in South Africa, antiviral treatments have saved many lives. Back in 2002, a children's AIDS hospice near Johannesburg witnessed 87 infants die. Yet after the South African government began treating pregnant women with antiviral drugs, the number of infants who succumbed to the disease fell dramatically. Experience has shown that educating impoverished girls in South Africa has effectively reduced the likelihood that they and their babies will be infected with HIV later in life. Alarmed by the growing Zika virus, women activists in Brazil are working to reform that South American nation's harsh abortion laws. They're campaigning to give pregnant women with Zika access to safe abortions. Pregnant women with Zika are at risk of giving birth to infants born with abnormally small heads, a condition known as microcephaly, as well as other birth defects. Currently, women in Brazil with Zika cannot terminate their pregnancies even if tests find birth defects are present in their unborn babies. Over the winter, health authorities in 5 Latin American nations urged women not to become pregnant. Lawyers from the Yale University-based Global Health Justice Partnership concluded that existing Brazilian laws on reproductive health violate the human rights of women. The partnership charges that the government has failed to enact adequate measures to ensure that all women have access to comprehensive reproductive health information or options. Brazilian activists are now pushing for an emergency court ruling to give women with Zika the right to an abortion. Deborah Diniz, a law professor at the University of Brasilia, insisted, "This is an emergency. We have an epidemic, and the epidemic shows the face of Brazilian inequality." Long before Donald Trump campaigned for president, proclaiming his anti-immigration positions, Arizona's Sheriff Joe Arpaio in Greater Phoenix engaged in racial profiling and harassment of new immigrants. According to the American Prospect, the sheriff's office has paid $140 million in damages resulting from multiple lawsuits and in May was found in contempt of a court order on racial profiling. Opposition to Arpaio's conduct has mobilized Latino voters in the Grand Canyon state. Over the last 12 years, Latino registration in Arizona has increased by 165%, and political observers say the surging Latino vote could topple Republican Senator John McCain, who faces a tight re-election fight. This fall, organizers hope to mobilize 1 million Latino voters in Arizona. But the rate of political participation among Latinos is much lower than other Arizonans, with many of those eligible for naturalization opting not to apply. One consequence of low voter numbers is that Latinos are vulnerable to right-wing inspired policies such as the controversial anti-immigrant law SB 1070, which was passed by the state legislature and signed into law in 2010. This week's news summary was compiled by Bob Nixon. For Between the Lines, I'm Richard Hill.
On the Friday before the Democratic National Convention was preparing to kick off in Philadelphia on July 25th, the long-standing efforts to unify the party after a fractious primary campaign were upended with WikiLeaks' release of over 19,000 internal DNC emails. Those emails from seven key figures within the party document discussions that explored ways in which the DNC could undermine Bernie Sanders' campaign as he was fighting to overtake frontrunner Hillary Clinton. One email from the Democrats' chief financial officer, Brad Marshall, suggested that they use religion against a certain possible atheist with a Jewish heritage, presumably Senator Sanders. While many Bernie Sanders supporters had long charged that the DNC rigged the primary system to favor former Secretary of State Clinton, the WikiLeaks emails appeared to confirm their accusations. Large numbers of delegates immediately called for the firing of DNC chair, Florida Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who turned in her resignation. Soon after, however, Clinton appointed Wasserman Schultz honorary chair of her campaign's 50-state program. But for all the anger about the leaked DNC emails, Hillary Clinton's choice of Virginia Senator Tim Kaine as her vice presidential running mate was a far more serious blunder in the view of many in the party's progressive wing. While Bernie Sanders' progressive platform won 46% of pledged delegates in the primary campaign, Clinton chose a centrist Democrat, whose positions on free trade, banking deregulation, and reproductive rights are the polar opposite of nearly half the party. Your reporter spoke with journalism professor Jeff Cohen, co-founder of the group Roots Action, and communications coordinator of the Bernie Delegates Network. Here, Cohen explains why he believes the choice of Kaine is a colossal mistake that could put Donald Trump in the White House.
I mean, it's very rare where you have a losing candidate, and obviously we know from the emails that in spite of an unfair system, an unlevel playing field during the primary process, Bernie Sanders, an insurgent candidate, got 45% of the Democratic Party primary and caucus voters. It's quite an achievement. So I'm hearing a lot of people from Team Clinton saying, we need party unity, we need party unity. Well, the best way to have achieved party unity or a center-left alliance against Trump would have been to choose a vice presidential running mate other than Tim Kaine. It would have been to choose a vice presidential running mate that might bridge to the other wing of the party that's so wary of Hillary Clinton. Even Donald Trump did that. Trump chose as his vice presidential running mate Governor Pence, who had endorsed Ted Cruz. So it's not that unusual, and it was especially needed in the Democratic Party. Unfortunately, Senator Kaine, he's one of just a dozen Democratic senators who voted last year to fast-track Trans-Pacific Partnership. In many ways, he's in the conservative wing of the Democratic Party. So it was seen as sort of a poke in the eye when Hillary Clinton had this opportunity to try to bridge to the progressives and really build an alliance against Trump. And instead, she went with one of the more conservative Democrats in the U.S. Senate.
Jeff Cohen, I've read commentaries that try to rationalize Hillary Clinton's pick of Senator Tim Kaine of Virginia as her running mate by saying the left has nowhere else to go and that they will come into the fold and vote for Hillary in November. It's the independent voters that might be drawn to Donald Trump that she is trying to get with the nomination of Tim Kaine to be her vice presidential running mate. What do you make of that strategy?
Yeah. you're right that that's almost a mainstream media mantra, but I haven't heard that much today because it's finally dawned on the moronic mainstream media pundits that the Bernie supporters have somewhere to go. They have a home. They can stay home, or they could vote for Jill Stein, the Green Party. So it was a very, very stupid and risky strategy. What you're laying out is exactly what Team Clinton has been spinning and their friends in the punditocracy. I could count the ways that it's bad strategy if your goal is to defeat Trump and defeat him handily in November. First of all, you could go after these imaginary moderate Republicans. Maybe there's 13 of them left in the country. But there's 13 million people that voted for Bernie Sanders. And if you choose someone like Tim Kaine, who's got this position on corporate trade, even within the last week, he signed on to a letter wanting to deregulate banks. I mean, if you choose someone like Tim Kaine, and by the way, he's a smart guy. Everyone says he's a very nice guy. He's got some liberal positions on especially gun control. He's been particularly brave. You know, he's got some redeeming qualities. But on the main issues that divided Hillary supporters from Bernie supporters, he's almost always on the wrong side. He's on the corporate side. So if you want to help Trump win, you, number one, divide up the Democratic Party by that choice. Two, you choose someone who's quite corporate, and you saw Donald Trump immediately when the choice was made. He's saying, I'm the guy who's standing with the common people, and they've got two corporate Democratic establishment insiders on their ticket. So it makes absolutely no strategic sense. The right strategic move in defeating Trump would be to choose a populist as the VP running mate who could expose the faux populism of a Donald Trump, a billionaire who spent his whole life living in the lap of luxury. So the way to get the independent voters and the swing voters and the Bernie voters is to put someone on the ticket like an Elizabeth Warren or a Sherrod Brown, the senator from Ohio, who even endorsed Hillary, but he's known as a guy who's fought for labor, fought for the working class, fought against NAFTA, fought against these trade deals. You'd put someone on your ticket who's an unmistakable populist and, you know, who's been there for years and years, not someone who wants to weaken regulations of Wall Street or some of the banks, as Tim Kaine's been trying to do in the last week or two.
That was Jeff Cohen, journalism professor and director of the Parks Center for Independent Media at Ithaca College. For more perspectives on the Democrats' vice presidential nominee, Senator Tim Kaine, visit our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org. In one of the most contentious presidential primary campaigns in recent Republican Party history, billionaire real estate mogul Donald Trump emerged victorious out of a crowded field that began with 17 candidates. Despite the fact that Trump has rejected GOP orthodoxy on some issues, such as free trade, privatization of Social Security, and support for NATO, the former reality TV star did attempt to please and retain the loyalty of one key element of the Republican Party coalition, the Christian right. Trump's choice of Indiana Governor Mike Pence, a Christian conservative, as his running mate, was no accident. Although Trump is obviously not very religious, has been married three times, and curses like a sailor, a recent Pew Research Center poll found that nearly four-fifths of evangelical voters in the U.S. are rallying strongly in favor of Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump. Pew pointed out that white evangelical Protestants make up one-fifth of all registered voters in the U.S. and roughly one-third of all voters who say they identify with or lean toward the Republican Party. The just-concluded 2016 Republican National Convention in Cleveland ratified one of the most right-wing party platforms in GOP history. The platform is a gift to the religious right that includes planks reaffirming opposition to abortion and rights for LGBTQ Americans. The platform would also make Christianity the official religion of America, replace sex education with abstinence-only advice for teenagers, and repeal the 50-year-old tax law that prohibits churches and other tax-exempt organizations from political organizing. Your reporter spoke with Frederick Clarkson, Senior Fellow for Religious Liberty with Political Research Associates, who talks about the Republican Party's continued fealty to culture war policies advocated by the Christian right.
Trump has rearranged the party politics in terms of who he is and the kind of politics he represents and the way he campaigns. And the Christian right has never seen anything like him any more than anybody else. But that said, his relationship with some surprising conservative Christian leaders goes back not just 6 months or a year, but for what my colleagues and I can track, 4 or 5 years. And they were already talking about